It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with
the Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Freezing Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Santa come once, yeah, we all know. Don't use my chimney, got a key to my door. Oh. Oh, look what Santa did, messing with me. You call it Merry Christmas, I say Santa's messing with me. Cold, sipping my tea, sets my wife apart.
I love this. Santa's messing with the kid. And back at Santa Anita, hour three this morning. I guess you lost me there at the end. I'm not sure what point. Casey had to call me because I was looking out at the racetrack, and we're sun-drenched at this point. And at some point, Jack Carava, we're going to end up warmth. I hope that it's going to be like it's supposed to be out here.
Yeah, it's definitely our coldest morning so far, but I think the afternoon is looking promising.
Or at least, yeah, it's going to trip into 60s.
Yeah,
I've been here a week, and this was not the same thing was going on in Arizona. We were at the symposium, and it was crazy cold in Arizona for all the times I've gone there. It's nuts.
Yeah, the good thing about California is that our mornings of cold weather doesn't last a whole long time, maybe a month or two, and we're right back to it. So,
well, then I'm looking forward to coming back for whether it's, we'll see. A lot of times we'll come for the Bob Lewis and the Santa Anita Derby, you know, some combination, usually in concert with Vegas, with the NHC, which is late this year. So I've got my travel will be a little, I don't know, we'll see how it shakes out. But great to be here, great to finally get you on, because I know that I've reached out to you at least two or three times since you made this move, stepped away from the training side, and you and Kieran McLaughlin doing... I'm sure some would say the smart thing, and you know, making your mornings and your days a little less volatile.
Yeah, it's a pleasant change. I did it for a lot of years, and I'm enjoying it. It's so far so good, and it's a different kind of pressure, but it's been fine.
What was, you know, we've had this conversation with Kieran. What really tripped it for you that you said, you know what, I can't keep doing this. I mean, you're certainly not alone. There's a lot of horsemen that have just gotten frustrated with certain elements of the industry. I mean, give us a feel for,
you know,
the
that
decision.
That definitely was a portion of it. You know, the frustration. Was trained for a lot of years and was pretty spoiled. I had some very, very good owners and some terrific people to train for all the way through, and some of those people passed on, and the quality of horses had gone down for me a bit, and it just became more and more of a struggle. And you know, even now I really miss coming to the barn, you know, putting your hands on horses' legs every morning and all that stuff. But this was something that, you know, keeps me in the game, and you know, other than, you know, being the hands-on approach, but it was definitely time. You know, I trained for about 30 years, maybe a little more. And like I said, you know, a lot of my owners passed on, and I trained for them for so many years, and I missed that. And still had a few good people, but the numbers of horses that I had gone down. You know, I was always used to having 30, 40, 50 horses, and gotten down where I was just had about a dozen. And it just the numbers didn't jive anymore, and it just didn't seem like it was the thing to do. And it was, you know, after a while you start looking at it and you're like, I'm paying to go to work every day, and
yeah,
that just doesn't make any sense.
Well, you won over 1,100 races in your career, and your share of graded stakes, and it's one of the things we talk about this all the time, and it's the skill set to be a horse trainer is already unique and demanding. Then you've got to be a personnel director in terms of hiring and training, and then you got to be a business manager in terms of, you know, running the show and you know, billing and everything that goes with that, and that's a complexity. But then there's the marketing of yourself to, you know, a potential owners, and who says that every single horseman is all five of those things rolled into one?
Sure, Joe. You know, that's very true. And I had lost the desire to, you know, hang out at the races all day long on days I didn't run horses and schmooze and talk to people. And I, you know, I was so spoiled with the people I trained for so many years, and it just didn't, you know, people stopped coming to the races as much. It used to be, you know, every day you'd come out, you'd see everybody every day, and then pretty soon, you know, you were coming out and it just wasn't as much, you know, people hanging out and stuff like that. And quite frankly, you know, in California, I know other places are probably the same. I don't have that experience. But in California, you know, just the state with, you know, different kinds of pressures they put on you with, you know, workman's comp and, you know, feed prices going up, everything. And it just, again, it just the numbers didn't fit for me. And I thought, well, you know, let's try something different. I never, you know, never say never. You know, I didn't sell all my tack. I got rid of most of it, but I saved some of it, put it in storage just in case that if that day ever came again. But no, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing, you know, having a couple jocks now and really, you know, I'm out here every morning, same time basically, and talking to, you know, my buddies and really enjoying it. You know, watch the races in the afternoon. It's actually a lot more action. You know, when you're training horses, you're running, you know, one or two a day or whatever. And you, with a couple jocks, a lot of times you're riding, you know, 12, 15 horses on a card. And
sure,
that gives you a lot of action. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, there's a bunch of things to kind of dovetail out of this. And it started with Tyler Bayes.
Mm-hmm.
That was, and obviously you'd had a long relationship with him, you know, to make that transition. And I mean, did you float the idea to him, and or did he, you know, was it something that was an ongoing discussion?
You know, it was kind of a mutual thing. It was, you know, at Del Mar a couple of years ago, right at the end of the Del Mar meet, I knew he was coming back from the East, from Kentucky, and he was looking to come back to California. The idea kind of popped in my head at the time. The jockey colony was a bit thin here at that time. And, you know, I'm looking up and I said, you know, Tyler's, you know, if he comes back, he's going to be a top five rider here. You know, just looking at the colony. And I said, you know, this might be a good fit for me. We had a good relationship when he was riding. He used to ride a lot for me and just a great guy. And, I said, you know, maybe this would be the guy to start out with, and gave him a call. And he was actually on his way back and from Kentucky at the time, and just kind of floated the idea to him, and we kind of just, you know, it just came together, and he was like, yeah, that sounds good to me, and it really worked out good. We started out a little slow, you know, of course, when you get back to somewhere new, you know, or even back home, but it takes a while to kind of build up the clientele again, and it took a little bit of time. It took a few months, but then things kind of came together good, and he had a real good winter here last year. I think he finished third in the standings, and you know, one thing about Tyler, he makes your job easy because he's a hard worker and gets on a lot of horses in the morning and stuff like that. And you know, so he made my job easy, but at the same time, he was, you know, a pleasure to work for.
He's over at Oaklawn this year, so it puts you into a position to, you know, shop around and you know, some of this stuff, sometimes it's injury, sometimes it's, you know, the way in which, you know, jocks, the way jocks' minds work. Sure. And, you know, some grass is greener kinds of things. But you actually find yourself in kind of a crossroads with a couple of different jocks, because Kyle Fry, mm-hmm, who certainly recent months has been riding as well as he has in ages.
Yeah, so I had Tyler for about a year, and then floated the idea of picking up a second jock, and Kyle was looking for an agent, and that was about a year ago now, and picked up Kyle, and they were a good combo, especially all winter. You know, a lot of my clients that I was riding for were just as good with Kyle or Tyler either way, and they played off each other real well. We were able to mix and match, and Kyle's a very good rider, and rides hard, and you know, he's I think he's a young man, and he's, you know, I think his future's ahead of him. One thing about him is he's a good horseman, and he's willing to put in the work as well, and that's what you need to do in Southern California. You need to come out here and work these horses and get familiarized with everybody, and that's what gets your foot in the door in some of these barns. And Kyle's put his best foot forward and is working hard, and I've really seen I've really been pleased with his riding, and I think, like I said, I think the best is yet to come with him.
Seemed like he you know, and this is not an unusual career arc for riders for the early part of their career. You know, comes in, makes kind of a splash as an apprentice. We had him on the East Coast a little bit. And then, as always, you know, lose the bugs and it gets a little tougher. You go on sometimes, you know, a bit of a protracted streak. Sometimes, you know, there's certain agents that when a guy loses the bug, they'll send him on their way. and then, you know, you fishtail around a little bit. He ended up at Golden Gate for a period, and it seemed to kind of level him. And now it feels like he's back in A circuit shape, essentially, and more mature. And when you're a horse player, or when you're covering, I'm doing both. I play and I'm covering the races. You start seeing guys' names at the top of the chart, and you say, this guy's getting hot again, and his things are going right. And so it turns out that it corresponded with you taking the book.
Yeah, he's he moved around a little bit. He's originally from the Bay Area, and I think that's where he got his start. And then once he started moving around quite a bit, and just didn't, you know, he was restless, and he jumped from parks to Philly, around Philly and a few places, and I don't think he ever stayed in one place long enough to catch on real, real well. And then he came back to the Bay Area, Northern California, and then really started settling in and doing real well. And and then as far as settling down, I think that's kind of corresponded with, you know, getting married, having a baby. He's married and his wife's expecting a second child, and so he's really fallen into a good family situation, and I think that's really been helpful to him and get him settled down. So he lives close by here to Santa Anita, and like I said, a hard worker. I've got him out here usually 6 days a week working horses, and it's just really working well for him, and it seems like it's shown in his riding in the afternoons.
The other name he just told me, because as we were coming on the air too, Giovanni Franco is going to be added to the roster.
Yeah, Giovanni contacted me about 3 or 4 days ago. Was thinking about coming back to California, and did real well here a couple years back. Was looking to make a change to coming back, and it kind of corresponded well with Tyler giving Oaklawn a try. So with Tyler going back to Oaklawn, I was open to taking Giovanni, and Giovanni's a terrific rider as well, and especially, you know, if you watch, you know, a lot of his replays on turf, he does a real, real good job with turf horses and rides real good, and he's a very, very, got a great personality and very pleasant to talk with. And there's a lot of horsemen here that you just mentioned his name, and they're fine with Giovanni, as far as he's such a pleasant guy to be around, and like I said, and his riding is terrific, and he's ridden some nice horses over the years, and again, I think he's one that, if he settles into a good rhythm here and puts the work in the mornings, which is the important thing here, if he'll put the work in the mornings, I think it'll show in the afternoons. And it's going to be a, you know, for the first 2 or 3 months here, it's going to be a crowded jocks room. There's some big names.
This came up yesterday, in fact, when we started talking about Kaz Kimura just drove in from Woodbine. You've got Frankie Dettori that's going to be. I mean, I don't think Frankie's taking 6 calls a day.
Sure.
I mean, he'll ride selectively, certainly. You've already got, let's see, there's Mike Smith is here. You've already got a certain set of established riders. Some thoughts about, let's kind of morph into a discussion about the meet and on a broader basis, Jack Carrabba with us, and the situation here on the West Coast and some of the challenges.
Yeah, I've been a little surprised with the number of names I keep seeing, popping up, showing up for the Santa Anita meet, and it goes to prove that good weather is an attractor to a lot of things. I think just riding in the pleasant weather here in California, at least for the first few months of the year, is usually the attraction that gets these guys coming out. And of course, there's some quality horses here and some quality horsemen, but I was surprised by the number of names that I've heard were coming out, but you know, that most of them will probably, you know, March, April, May will start migrating back to their homes and, you know, where they normally typically ride. And I think it'll open things up for guys here. And, you know, the one challenge is, you know, with a long 6-month meet at Santa Anita, you know, even running just 3 days a week, you know, it can become a bit of a grind through the winter. And sometimes with if the weather gets a little tricky, a little rain, this and that, and sometimes the field sizes can get a little bit on the smaller side.
Well, and when you're talking about, we just mentioned Dettori and Kaz Kimura, new faces, Flavien Prat, Juan Hernandez, of course, Ramon Vasquez, who's become a new, that was a smart move on his part to come here. He was ready for that. Johnny, is Ron Anderson going to have Johnny out here? Again, selective mounts. Umberto Rispoli.
Yeah.
Right? And Maldonado. Joe Bravo still.
Yeah.
Joe Bravo still out here. Hector Berrios, who seems like he's getting decent calls. And then Smith and Victor Espinoza.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. It's a niche situation where you have to really concentrate on your people. You have to put the work in the mornings, work for your barns, try to ride the horses that you're working. You know, it's one of those things that you know, you just keep on, you know, you keep on trucking every day and just keep on working hard and you know, try to turn those workers into winners. And sometimes it works out great, and other times it doesn't, but you just put in the work. That's all you can do.
Well, this is perfect. I was kind of hoping for this, and indeed we're able to put the entry together, because Mark Glatt, who we just talked to last week, but more than happy to have Glatt come on with his man. How about he doesn't come out here at 4:45 anymore?
No, he's actually here pretty early most mornings still.
Well, you were out here alone the first thing, because I was watching for that, because for years and years I'd get here at 5:15 and Garava, Glatt, always here first.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have to get going quite as early, but he's still here getting ready to conduct his business every day.
All right, you giving him some calls at all?
Yeah, Jax.
Yeah, Mark's my
quite
Mark's,
a few for me.
Mark's my man. He's helped me out, put me on some winners, so it's been great. Yeah, it's been absolutely great. And yeah, he's always out here early. I try to get out here as early as I can, but it's not quite as early as the training days. But yeah, we still try to hit the ground running every morning.
I love it, and we're just getting, you know, doing a little bit of a pre-meet conversation, and you and I hinted at it the other day when we talked. Some thoughts here. We're under 2 weeks away.
Yeah, you know, it's always nice to get started with the Santa Anita meet in the wintertime, and turf racing. There's a lot of stakes starting to start the meet out, and just looking forward to hopefully a good, safe meet for everybody.
What do you have left to run across town?
Just a couple, depending upon whether the races go or not.
All right. Over at Los Al, one more weekend before things take off here. And trying to think of follow-up on some of the ones we discussed last week after the stake win and closing weekend at Del Mar, right? Was that... Were you aboard?
No, I don't think. I can't remember.
Can't
actually
remember who you had on breaking.
I think it was
Bell
Pratt.
Street Bridie?
Yes.
Yeah. No Pratt rode her. Okay. She runs back in the Oaks here opening day, and we have another Euro import running in the Mathis Brothers opening day. Seems like a really good horse.
Which one?
His name is I'm a Gambler.
Okay, we didn't talk about that one.
He's a very highly rated horse from Europe that. The Cohen family bought from Tattersalls, and we took a little time with him once he got here, and just really looking forward to his U.S. debut here.
Nice.
on the day after Christmas.
Well, and of course, when is that? In fact, I just got a text. When do the noms close, and when's the draw? They 3 days out or further?
Noms were yesterday, closed yesterday, okay. So we haven't seen them yet. They'll probably be out sometime today, I would guess.
Cool.
But actually, I'm not sure what day they're entering for opening day. It's probably a week out or so, or somewhere in that neighborhood, just so that you know, we don't have to mess with any of that during the holidays.
Well, the good point. And I'm anxious for I'll be on vacation starting the 20 whatever that is. Friday's the 23rd, so opening day is the 20 is the got to be a Monday.
It's a Monday. The
26th. So
yeah.
they'll probably take. Yeah, they Thursday or Friday.
We
right?
run we run one day and then we have a few days off, and after the we run the one opening day and then we have a few days off and go back to Friday through Monday racing or Friday through Sunday racing after that.
Well, you know, last year when I was with Hammer last year at Oaklawn with the new expanded schedule, and it was tough on the horsemen. I mean, basically, you know, sitting on your hands 4 days a week. And just running the 3 days. I mean, you've had that a little bit. You've got to get used to, but it's tough. I mean, compared to the way. I mean, when you guys broke in, I mean, how many days a week were?
Yeah, it was 5 days
five
a week.
Days.
You know, if it was Wednesday through Sunday, and then Del Mar was 6 days, and then it just kind of contracted down from there. And you know, obviously. 4 days a week would obviously be a lot better, but you know, I think they kind of go with the long meet here. They kind of go with what they feel can present quality, is you know, quality racing the best they can. Now, if we could ever get back to those 4 day weeks, obviously would be a move in the right direction, and hopefully that day will come sometime.
What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think that 4 days a week would be certainly beneficial to everybody. You know, you give. You know, it's all about opportunity, and, you know, we really don't run that many less races because I think they add a couple of races to each of the Friday, Saturday, Sunday cards, or try to, but it's more about being able to schedule and, you know, get different categories to go. You know, the more racing you have, the more opportunities because they're having to write, you know, different races, and so it really restricts your ability to get in to the race that you want to be in a lot of times. And I think what also happens is you end up with these delays with races that don't come back in a timely fashion just because they can't get them fit in. And then if you get a little weather or, you know, you're off the turf for some reason.
Exactly.
Or there's a gap in between meets where there's no turf, it can make it really difficult. Only 3 days a week. You can only run so many turf races a day, so... You know, I think I'm in a position with a couple of horses that ran the beginning part of Del Mar on the turf. They're turf onlys, and the race doesn't necessarily come up the first part of the meet at Santa Anita. You could be sitting in the barn, you know, easily a couple of months for no reason other than there just isn't a race available. And then in January, you know, there's always the threat of weather that could delay things. So it just makes things difficult. So hopefully the horse inventory will improve here in Southern California. I'm sure the racetracks would love to get back to 4 days a week, and we'll see if we can't get there someday.
And it's one of the strangest conundrums that you face, and certainly, you know, the horse playing community, you know, we want as full of a set of fields as we can get. And then as an owner, I mean, I can tell you that in New York, it's one of the incredible frustrations. I mean, you're waiting for a race, and if it God forbid it doesn't go from the book, then begging to have it added as an extra, and then, you know, well, how did, you know, how many they got? Four. Okay, they'll bring it back tomorrow. It got three. Okay, now they stop putting it on as an extra, and now you're waiting till the next book. And you know, here you see fields, you know, six horse fields go, and you want to kill yourself. I mean, you got a horse that, and how do you train a horse that you're hoping to get in? You've got a spot and you've got a date in mind, and next thing you know, you got another 17 days before, and you don't know when the race is actually going to go. So how do you train the horse?
Yeah, these are all frustrations. I see it from this side. You know, being an agent now, I see it, you know, more, even a little bit more, because I'm talking and interacting with several people every day, and you know, and so I hear these frustrations from people, and I really notice at this time of year, with the multiple meat changes, we have a lot of, you know, where we're changing from the short Delmar meat, you know, and just going from meat to meat here at towards the end of the year, we have to keep jumping around, and there's some frustration. Once you seem to get into like the Santa Anita meat, where it's a long, where it's kind of a long, longer grind, it seems like the races fall a little bit more into a pattern where it can, where you can kind of see where you're going, and like the, you know, having the short, what used to be the Oak Tree meat in October, and then that's for a month, and then you jump down to Del Mar for a month, and those little gaps between with different racing secretaries, different racing offices, different condition books, that this seems to be the time of the year where it gets frustrating, especially with turf horses. People just don't get the opportunities to get into a regular everyday pattern with them, where they're running them once every, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, where they're a little more comfortable. And hopefully, you know, once this meet kind of gets underway and gets going, you'll see a little bit of a better steady schedule.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, one of the many challenges that we face these days with you know, with the schedule. And one of the worst things, you know, or one of the toughest phone calls you can make to an owner is your race didn't go. And it's disappointing. You know, oftentimes it eventually ends up going, but then you brought the question up, okay, you've trained your horse to this particular day, you know, and now with some of the restrictions on when you can and can't breeze them, you know, it becomes a challenge. You almost have to have your horse here at Santa Anita. You have to have them signed up for works in 48 hours in advance. Well, if you're entering and your race don't go, maybe you want to blow them out the next day because you're anticipating the race is going to go a day or two later.
Yep.
You can't do it because you're thinking you're running your horse, not working them, so you're not signed up to work. And so those are the challenges that you know, that come up nowadays.
Well, and I mean, for people that don't understand, we talk, you hear this conversation most often leading up to Breeders' Cup or Triple Crown races or the biggest Saturdays, and we talk about the training pattern and how two works out is the work that, you know, you really ask, and one workout is more of a maintenance kind of a breeze. Well, how do you keep a horse sitting on go for 6 straight weeks while you're waiting for that race to either come back in the book, or, I mean, frankly, if you know it's going to come back in the book, or if the racing secretary says to you it'll go next time, I promise you, I mean, then at least you've got something to hopefully rely on. But if it's this nebulous, you know, on the overnight, and it'll be an extra, and we'll see. I don't know how anybody, you probably got a bigger chance of getting a horse hurt. You've brought them up to a fever pitch to be ready, and now they're on edge, and you got to take some of the steam out of them and hold them that way for weeks.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's just a challenge. I mean, these horses, you know, when they get injuries, they get injuries working and training in the morning. They might aggravate something in the afternoon, but you know, I want to run them. I want to run them, like Jack said, perfect timing is 4 to 5 weeks for these horses. And, you know, you don't have to train, you know, most horses very much with a month off. But you start getting into that 6 to 8 weeks, you got to start leaning on them a little bit more in the morning. And, you know, unfortunately, that's when, you know, when a lot of injuries pop up for the first time. So, just like I said, one of the many challenges we face these days.
Can you, that's a great question to ask you both. I mean, can you, without working, you know, a timed workout, can you just, you know, 2 minute licking and, you know, telling a rider, you know, give him a good flourish the last quarter, the last 3/8, can you get one adequately prepared that way?
I think you can. It's not really my style. You know, I know a lot of guys do. Seems to be the way they do it on the East Coast, a lot of, you know, looking at their workout patterns back there. But you know, in California, the one thing about it is it's always been this way. You better be ready.
Yeah.
From a fitness standpoint,
yeah.
You can't really lose much training here because the guys next to you that you're in with, they've you know, they've trained their horses pretty hard. And I think probably Jack would agree that these horses in Southern California are trained harder than anywhere in the country.
Yeah, they're you know, horses are ready to go here, like you said, all the time, and it's one of those things that is definitely the, you know, the frustrating thing, and it's you know, the injury thing is what would get you when races don't go, and you know you're going to have to press on them a little bit more or a little bit harder than normal. And it comes down to simple math. You think about a horse runs once a month, typically runs once a month, so they run one time in 30 days. Well, they probably go out to the track and train 22, 24 times a month. And so just the simple math tells you, you know, that's where you're going to get your injuries. Just, you know, you're out there so much more. And, of course, they're not going full speed at, you know, all the time, but, you know, anything can happen at any time. You still have to walk back and forth to the barn, and they're good-feeling horses, and, you know, it's just one of those things, and if you can get in a good pattern with the horse, it's obviously, and you can give them some downtime, and you know your race is got a good chance to go in the next time, you kind of can get in a good pattern with the horse. But when you're it's this constant stop-start is the frustrating part, and then the part that, you know, that typically comes up as a problem.
You both have trained long enough and been around it long enough to have seen the change in philosophy about track maintenance. And you talk about training hard. I mean, it used to be here on the West Coast that you know, famously, you know, you had the fastest times in the country and you know, fast racetracks. Then we've had this shift where these deeper, slower, you know, the thinking was, you know, the slower is safer. Well, not if they have to slog their way through, you know, 6-inch deep cushion, that's not necessarily safer. You've seen this change in track maintenance concept. How does that figure in for you, Mark?
Well, I think you get different kinds of injuries with different track styles. You know, I think there's a happy median. And I think we're starting to see a little bit of a transition into quickening the tracks up a little bit again. You know, Del Mar ran fairly quick over the summer, and again this fall. Santa Anita, I would say, the same. But really, for the horses and training horses, all you want is consistency. You want it to be the same every day as much as you possibly, you know, as much as it possibly can be. You know, weather sometimes plays a part into consistency of tracks, but I think there's a, like I said, a happy median. If good horses run 9 and change, you know, and average horses run, you know, or slower maidens run 11 and change, you know, to me that's the perfect track. And but when you see good horses running 11 and change, that's a little too slow. And like I said, I think you end up wearing your horse out when you know, they're constantly struggling on these deeper tracks. So, you know, finding that happy median is really important.
And what I see from this side of it and dealing with a lot of different trainers and talking to their philosophies and stuff, the one thing I see with the deeper tracks the last couple of years here is that people start getting a little bit frustrated with, like, let's say first time starters and stuff like that. They'll run them even going 3/4, you know, 6 furlongs on, as a first out, and horses are pretty ready to run in your mind, and you go back to the barn after they've run first time out and they're just stressed from the deep racetrack, and they're really blowing hard, and they seem to be, you know, it's like it was you look at them and you can tell it was a really hard race on them with this deep track. And so what's the consequence of what I see is that people are starting to turn more towards turf racing for younger horses, and it's pushing people more towards the turf. And that brings a whole set of problems from the standpoint of, you know, over-racing, overusing the turf, because then pretty soon you look up and we're entering for 12 races, you know, 8 races in the book and 4 extras, and you know, and pretty soon you look up and only the turf races are filling, and guys want to run, a lot of times want to run their first time starters on the grass, because they seem to come out of the races better. They don't stress themselves. You go back to the barn after a first-time starter runs on the grass, and they're barely blowing, and it was a good experience for them, you know. And so it just pushes people more and more towards the grass, and that, again, that sets up a whole set of problems for the racetrack and the management themselves, because pretty soon, you know, people just want to run on the grass only.
Hey, talk to McPeak and Cassie. They do it, I mean, as a matter of course, essentially.
Sure.
Just as a way to introduce to a horse. In addition, they're not going to get a face full of dirt. You give them the first race experience, and you know, it's instantly, at least you've taken one potential negative factor away.
Sure, sure. And in turf racing, you know, a lot of times the pace is can be a little slower, where they don't fly early. They sit, they finish up, and it's a good experience for a young horse to sit and finish up and not get stressed out from a bunch of, like you said, a bunch of dirt in their face, or a deep racetrack where they had to struggle the last eighth of a mile. And horses just seem to bounce back out of their first start a lot of times. So you see so many guys from my end of it now, talking to so many different people that are looking to get their first-time starters in on the grass. And again, it makes it hard to fill some of these dirt races. So I think, to Mark's point, where they're starting to tighten the main track up a little more now, I think that's the smart move, and to get it where horses, it's not quite as deep, and the younger horses won't get so stressed with their first and second start, as they're, you know, that's a very, you know, a time where they're learning how to run, and you want every experience for a young horse to be as good as possible, so they learn to enjoy the game and not get stressed out by the game.
Jack Carava and Mark Glatt with us, two of our favorites, and let me slip in one industry overarching issue. One thing that you get to avoid now is the administration of the sport. Any HISA thoughts? And are you just kind of watching and waiting and waiting to see what happens next?
Yeah, I thought HISA was going to be something totally different than what it turned out to be. I thought they were going to be an oversight, you know, kind of an oversee horse racing on a national level. I think they jumped in with both feet and to try and keep track of every single horse like they, you know, proposed to do. Just the record keeping and the policing of all of what they, you know, were looking to get accomplished was, you know, nothing's impossible, but that was fairly
ambitious.
Awfully close.
Yeah.
I mean, and really it takes a long time for all of that to come into play. I think that, you know, particularly I train mostly in California. I think the state, at the state level, they're doing a really good job of keeping track of things, and it was going to make for a lot more work, you know, for each individual stable and trainer. You know, when it was kind of double, it was overkill, because most of those things we were already doing for the state, if not all of them. So we'll see where it goes. A lot of cost involved in whether it's worth the cost or not, for someone else to decide. But anyway, I think we do a great job in California anyhow, and we'll see how it plays out.
Well, and it's encouraging just to hear you know, be confident about where things stand, because if we go back, you know, 2-3 years when things were really shaky, you particularly were very vocal and had important things to say, and even were concerned about maybe having to pick up and relocate your operation. And I remember that being, you know, just feeling really disheartened about the future. So it does feel like you feel a little bit, you know, more secure about where things stand.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly the breakdown rate has improved dramatically. I think there's a number of reasons why. And so I think overall we've done everybody within the industry has done a good job. And, you know, I think the scrutiny that these horses are under now is tremendous, and I don't think we'll get back to where we went through in that stage. And I think there were a lot of factors that played into that that didn't maybe come out as much as we would have hoped. You know, we had a terribly wet winter that winter, I recall, and, you know, we had a lot of different, we talked about earlier, consistency in racetracks, and we had a lot of inconsistent racetracks due to weather that winter. So I think it was just the perfect storm that unfortunately, you know, we had to suffer through a bad time for, but I think maybe we're better because of it.
Well, and hopefully on the pendulum swinging in the other direction. Delighted to get the two of you together this morning. Our first, it's the end of the year, our last trip of the year. But you know, next year back, you know, come in a couple of different times, and the meet will be rolling along. So best of luck to you, Mark Glatt, and your owners, your horses, with the meet ahead. Jack, you with your riders, Kyle Fry and Giovanni Franco. Delighted. Love having the two of you together.
Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Let's get a picture of the two of you, and for the today's listing, although neither one of you are big social media types, to say the least. You let the horses and now the jocks do the talking. Let me get the perfect background. Oh yeah, there we go. All right, Jack Carava and Mark Glatt.
Good to see you.
Always great. Thanks, guys. We got about 10 minutes to close out the morning, and the funniest part about having Papo on next, Papo Morales is going to join us, and we were together at Arizona, and I saw him, you know, on the Sunday before the thing started, and then somehow didn't get a chance to sit down with Papo. And so we'll do it now, I guess. We'll get his impressions of symposium for last week. Papo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. I think it's the worst of it's behind us here at Santa Anita after a couple of rough mornings, Happy to connect. I was just saying that it was the craziest thing. I saw you before the symposium started, and then we couldn't get together the next 3 days.
That's kind of how it goes, Steve, between what's going on in the conference rooms and then the outside meetings, which is kind of how we use the symposium, because you do get a lot of the executives from other ADWs. We had the ADW meeting with the Portland or the Oregon Racing Commission, so we got that done. Got tote meetings, so it's lots of meetings. There's long days, and I was just blessed I was able to take my wife. I didn't see her much during the day, but she's able to go out to eat with us at dinner, so it was nice.
I love it. And you know, this meeting in particular, this edition of the symposium, it did feel like a particularly vibrant gathering. And you know, some other thoughts. I mean, with some things you sat in on, maybe that just of interest, or did
yeah,
you? Pretty
I think I obviously sat in with the conference with Peter Fontenelle and Marshall Graham, because I've known Marshall for years and he likes betting with us, so I was very interested in that talk, as well as the diversity and inclusion discussion, which. Like the industry, you know, for the most part, has a lot of work still to do. So I thought that was pretty well attended. We'll see if anything comes out of it. But I thoroughly enjoyed that one. And I know the industry is trying to make progress. But I think the key point coming out of there is, you know, there's a difference between having a seat at the table and then being heard and your opinion counting for something. And I think that's probably the next big step. That the industry needs to take, because I do think they're getting a couple more people, you know, minorities in upper management and certain positions. And now we just have to listen to those people because they have different perspectives, and anything this industry can do to have a different perspective is nothing but positive for the industry.
No, agreed. And we had the somewhat impromptu discussion with Dora Delgado and Jessica Paquette, the opportunity in that area, there's work to be done, obviously.
Right.
It's not.
Right. And Dora's done a great job, by the way. I mean, I don't know her personally. I've just seen what she's done at the Breeders' Cup, and I knew, I mean, I think there are over 50% of women that are currently employed actually for Breeders' Cup staff. So they've done a great job. And, you know, my wife runs her own consulting business, and it's an all-women consulting business. So she tries to empower women as well as minorities. And anything that the industry can do to step it up in that direction is great.
Well framed. Papo, you guys also had your opportunity to take in a little bit of Arizona's just amazing landscape, and you guys are active outdoors types, and you were hiking and enjoying every part of the trip.
Yeah, we went out a couple days early and spent the weekend before and drove up to Sedona. And luckily, I got a spinal injection before I went out, so the back held up for a couple days. But unfortunately, it's back to normal, so which is not a good thing. But we thoroughly enjoyed hiking out there, and I mean, it's beautiful. We're trying to plan another trip out there. We're doing Red River Gorge after Christmas, so we'll see how that goes. But we love it. You know, it's not for everybody. I mean, we like low-key weekends and just out with nature and no cell reception. So that can be a good thing or a bad thing. But, it's just beautiful out there. You know, I love to read, so I like to get up and watch the sunrise and do some reading and some writing. So we thoroughly enjoyed that aspect of the trip as well.
It is. It's an amazing for anybody that, you know, lives particularly in the east, the eastern half of the country. You just don't. It's a landscape that's so foreign, and it was one of the things that I've come to really enjoy about going out there, because it's just nothing I ever, I never really got to see growing up at all. That's almost like a moonscape to some degree, and that was one of the parts of the trip this summer when we went we drove Route 66. I think one of the things that Tina would agree to that we were most taken with was, that Arizona, New Mexico, then into Texas, the plains and the steppes and, all the plateaus. I mean, our drive, even the drive just from Phoenix up to hit Route 66 when we drove through Sonoma, we had talked about going, but we had not been, and we were just like astounded. Whatever anybody tells you about it, you're not really prepared to see it. It's so amazing.
Yeah, not even the pictures do it justice.
No,
it's amazing. I don't know, maybe it's the kinetic energy that's in the rocks up there. Who knows? But, it was really good. And Steve, I don't know what your schedule is the rest of the week, so I don't know if we're talking Friday or not.
Yeah.
I know you've got Hanukkah coming up. Is that Sunday, I believe?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll be home just in time. I'll be just in time to light the candles, because I, as many times now as Tina has lit the candles with me, all she can really stay is Shel Hanukkah at the end of the first prayer. So I can't count on her to light the candles.
Yeah, and I think it's important. See, I don't know if you've ever talked about it, not directly horse racing, but, a lot of people think that's kind of like the Jewish Christmas, which is it is not.
No.
Isn't it commemorating the second building of the temple?
Yes.
I kind of enjoy history, and I do religious studies, so after it was destroyed by the Syrians. But I think it's important to point that stuff out. It's very important, to you and to other people. I mean, you don't necessarily have to be Jewish to celebrate that sort of thing. So
no.
I'm all for it.
I love it. Well, I hope we'll talk to you Friday, because we need the form to win glance at the Springboard Mile.
Sounds great, Steve. I did do, this weekend, they had that one steak on Saturday, at Oakland on Saturday, that mistletoe steak. Short field, but all you had to do was click on wet, muddy, sloppy track. Top three horses were Lovely Ride, Coach, and Will Secret. So a six-horse field, the exact return $16 for a dollar. So it wasn't extremely tough to come up with.
How about that?
the key was getting that favorite out of the top two positions, like we commonly talk about. So
exactly,
just making a simple adjustment on form to win. Yeah, you could add a, you could have, you know, turned a profit on a short price or a short field. So that was a good play.
Well, and we also were following along too. Our friend Cheggers on Twitter, who does the international races, he puts them up, and some good help as well from the HKIR glances. We'll get together on Friday, Springboard Mile and more. I'll talk to you from Remington.
Yeah, sounds great, Steve. You have a safe trip out there.
I appreciate it. It's Papo Morales and Form to Win, and of course, right there in your AmWager interface. But otherwise, download it, and algorithm, outstanding support, and at a glance. We've got to get out and into the race day, kind of quiet out there on this Tuesday. But good luck if you're playing. Back for our last day at California tomorrow, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks to particularly Jack Carava joining us, and Ron Moquette, and more. Who else? Jake Delhomme and Alan Foreman earlier. Back with you tomorrow, 9 a.m. here at Santa Anita. Thanks, everybody.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program,